a very good evening to you. And here we are again on another Sweet and Swing on Manx Radio. Friday night is music night, as they say. What have we got? What about a bit from our friend Bud Freeman with Alex Welsh and his band? Ted Heath and his orchestra? More three-dimensional sound magic, mono to stereo. Bit of Charlie Kuntz to start off. About a GI jive.
This is the GI jive, man alive. It starts with the bugler blowing reveille over your bed when you arrive. Jack, that's the G.I. Jive. Rootle-de-toot, jump in your suit, make a salute. Voot! After you wash and dress, more or less, you go get your breakfast in a beautiful little cafe they call the Mess. Jack, when you convalesce, out of your seat, into the street, make with the feet. Reet! If you're a PVT, your duty is to salute the L-I-E-U-T. But if you brush the L-I-E-U-T, the MB makes you KB on the QT. This is the GI Jive, man alive. They give you a private tank that features a little device called fluid drive. Jack, after you revive, chunk all your junk back in the trunk. Fall on your bunk. Clunk. Man alive, they give you a private tank that features a little device called a fluid drive. Jack, if you still survive, chunk all your junk back in the trunk, fall on your bunk, clunk. Soon you're counting jeeps, but before you count to five, seems you're right back digging that G.I. Jive.
G.I. Jive, what else? I told you it was G.I. Jive. Johnny Mercer with Paul Weston and his orchestra, recorded in October of 1943 in Los Angeles. Johnny Mercer, of course, well known, wrote his own lyrics there for G.I. Jive, painting a fairly cheerful picture of service life, couched in jive talk. a slang made famous, of course, by Cab Calloway, who was a bit of a past master at that one, always a great storyteller and a wonderful entertainer, Cab Calloway. And Mercer, great flair for the telling phrase and went to, well, write the words for loads of songs, including, of course, the immortal Moon River. I think that was one of Joni Mercer's, wasn't it? Wonderful liner notes, actually, on this collection of American hits from World War II, written by Pete Vasher, the wonderful jazz critic. And he's got a great little story at the beginning of that, which sort of sums up the American presence in Britain during the latter half of World War II. And he says, two men walking down a suburban street, conversing in a lively fashion, gesturing expansively and chewing. Both are wearing army uniform, both the cloth darker in colour and better tailored than the coarser British battle dress. You know, it wouldn't be difficult, would it? I think they're known for being a bit rough and ready, the British stuff. No surprise there, then. Probably hasn't changed. Even their forage cap seems smarter, worn at a rakish angle, the shoes shinier. These exotic individuals are approached by two English youngsters, one of whom dares to ask, "Got any gum, chum?" Smiling, one of the American GIs, for that's what they were, reaches into his pockets and pulls out a couple of sticks of this much-coveted confection and hands them over. "Here, son," he says, with a pronounced American accent, as he and his companion continue on their way. The two boys unwrap the chewing gum eagerly and soon begin to ape their Yankee friends, munching enthusiastically. They've got a lot to answer for, haven't they, the Americans? Not least dirty pavements and sticky shoes. And, yes, a fairly unpleasant habit when it's practised a bit too overtly. However, he goes on, this apparently trivial event took place in North London in the mid-1940s. The identity of the soldiers, well, we'll never know. But that of the cheeky child who asked for the gum is simple enough to establish. It was me. Yes, Pete Vasher. Yep, the Yanks were in town, out and about, ready for action. While many of their British counterparts were fighting far away, these paragons from another place were having a field day. Watch Dad's Army. It's a very good Dad's Army about the Americans in town, isn't it? Which just sums up this story. With money to burn and tall tales to tell, they had their pick of the local female population who swooned over these glamorous strangers, loving their opulent, expansive style. Just like Hollywood film stars, they said. No wonder a jealous observer coined the bitter aphorism about GIs in Britain being overpaid, oversexed, and over here. Yes, I think we've heard that before. And I do remember speaking to a relative of my better half, the Mem Saab, who lived in London during the war. And whilst I'm sure she had some bad memories, when we sort of spoke to her about it this time over a cup of tea, she did say, I did have such a good time. Thank you. What a great note to finish on. Da-ba-da-ba, yes. Not going back to the root. It just catches you off guard, that. Almost caught me drinking coffee and stuffing my face with a currant bun. But yeah, love it. Love that. Really good, catchy, bouncy, and that cracking ending then going on to, if I was a better musician off the top of my head, I'd tell you what the note was. Da-ba-da-ba, da-da-da-da. It's like a minor, is it? Minor third, something like that. Wonderful stuff. Rather like that. Indeed, veteran trombonist Lou Davis worked with the Lou Stone Band and also Ambrose, and it was two of his colleagues from Ambrose Band that he chose for that particular number. Dick Ball on the bass, Max Abrams on the drums. Swing Me Sweetly and I Never Knew. The rest of the players in the group had Arthur Young on piano. He was quite a character as well. George Elliott on the guitar. Arthur Young, very talented pianist. He worked for Jack Hilton. And also, if you remember, the Six Swingers. Well, it was Arthur Young, who organised the Six Swingers and then later led the band at Hatchett's Restaurant in London, which was, I think he was there in residence throughout most of the Second War. And it was Young, and then featured the new keyboard instrument of the day. I suppose you could say it was the forerunner to the electric piano and the synthesizer, the Novachord. Terrific stuff, huh? Enjoyed that very nicely. But you don't often hear another one. You don't often hear, do you? Arthur Young, or Lou Davis for that matter, very much disappeared. But could they play? Of course they could, like all the musicians here on Sweet and Swing. They had their day, and as we all do, had their moment in the sun. But for them, they live on forever through the magic of their recordings, which not all of us can say, can we? I suppose someone might possibly dig out a cassette of Sweet and Swing in 100 years' time. I don't know whether it'd still be magnetised or not, but maybe someone, there are digital copies now, of course, aren't they? You know, it's all on the digital book. Will that keep? I don't know. It's state of the art now, but another few hundred years, will people be saying, oh, yes, sir. Remember back in the early 21st century, everything was digital. Everything was digital. Can't play it now, of course. No one has the capability to play digital. Not since we started just implanting chips straight into your brain, which played any music you wanted merely by thinking about it. I don't know where it will go, but you can imagine something similar happening, couldn't you? If you've got any thoughts, or any thoughts on the music, drop me a line anyway. It's always nice to hear from you. I do get the occasional bit of correspondence, but it'd be nice to get more. So any ideas, what you'd like to hear, not like to hear, whether you like Arthur Young, whether you like Glenn Miller, whatever. howardcaine@manxradio.com. That's all one word, all lowercase. Kane, C-A-I-N-E. And Manx Radio, of course, is M-A-N-X. Manx Radio, all one word. And it'd be lovely to hear from you. Far Away Club, if you're listening, even if you haven't got much to say, if you just want to say, I'm listening from Botswana, then I'd love to hear from you. And you can choose a track, or I'll play a track for you if you like. Can't say fairer than that, can you? We dug this one out last week before. Three Dimensional Sound. The jazz and vocal collection in three dimensional sound, the clarity and reality of such stereo from mono conversions that are really convincing. So if you've got headphones, or if you're listening on headphones, or indeed, if you're listening in between a pair of stereo speakers, put yourself in the sweet spot in the middle and see if it works. This was originally mono, it has to be said. Now inglorious, three-dimensional stereo. Or so it's claimed.
Thank you.
So how was that for you? Did it sound three-dimensional and in stereo, as it's claimed, at least on this collection? It is claimed to be the case. Three-dimensional sound. It goes back to the 1990s, I think this was. Yeah, 1996, where they've been doing this work on old mono recordings using new digital technology and such like to enhance them and make them sound like they were in stereo. Good fun, whichever way you look at it. I rather like that one. And you probably recognised the tune. I'm forever blowing bubbles. Yeah, you got that one, didn't you? It's a cracking one, isn't it? And you recognise who it was? Well, of course, it was the original Dixieland jazz band, who claimed to be the first jazz band, basically, in the world in many ways. They started out as Jazz Band, of course, before changing the spelling. It was originally Jazz, J-A-S-S, before becoming the double Z, Jazz Band. Original Dixieland jazz band, led, of course, by Nick LaRocca, the first band they claimed to record jazz commercially and to have hit recordings in the genre. I think that's not widely disputed, as far as I know. But certainly Nick LaRocca, the cornetist or clarinetist, I should say, and the leader of the band, reckoned that was the case. Took America by storm originally and came over and played again what is widely accepted to be the first ever jazz gig in Britain, in the Hippodrome in London, in England, March 1919. Didn't actually get that well reviewed, I think. Rather adverse press comments. But didn't put them off, and they were, you know, they're American, they were already successful in any case. I don't think they were going to worry about what a few British critics might have to say. And after playing in clubs and theatres, including the Palladium, the band gave a command performance before King George V, and then went on to make 18 sides for English Columbia on a series of dates. And the band's popularities were such then they needed bigger venues, and so it opened in the Hammersmith Palais. Sure, you've been there, I've been there a couple of times, where they had an audience of, wait for it, 5,800. Slightly larger than your average jazz gig these days, it has to be said. If you go to most jazz clubs in the capital these days, you might. If you go to Ronnie Scott's probably the biggest and certainly the most famous, and that does pack him out quite often, but you're talking about a few hundred, I would have thought. If you go to some of the other ones, like the 606, wonderful jazz club, over in Chelsea Way, Lotzer Road, or if you go to the marvellous Pizza Express in Dean Street, proper jazz clubs, and you are talking about 60, 70, something like that, I guess. 5,800 then, not bad. Pianist Russ Robinson in the original Dixieland jazz band, ODJB, isn't it? I always get that back to front, was unhappy with that move. And went home. just didn't like the crowds, I don't know. And his place was taken by the Londoner Billy Jones, who played on the last and, some say, best recorded dates for Columbia. And on that one, a sort of waltz with verse and syncopation, with Larry Shields taking the solo there in quite a low register. Good sound and an amazing story with the ODJB. And I'll leave it to you to decide just how successful the three-dimensional sound might be. Sounded good this end, has to be said. Sounded good this end. Good stuff.
Reason why I went into the switch shop. the moment that I closed the door, there, oh, you should have seen the sight that I saw there. The shoes were swinging on the floor there at the swing shoe shop. There were big black boots, jitterbug and a soft suede shoes, cut the rug in it. Cuban heels started trucking it. Why not drop in when you're shopping? And if your shoes have got a hole in them, feel they need a heel or sole in, come in and keep the rhythm rolling at the swing shoe shop.
lovely stuff, bouncing along under its own impetus, I suppose you would say. Charlie Kuntz, of course. I promised you some Charlie Kuntz. Haven't had any Charlie for a while. Clap hands, here comes Charlie, all the rest of it, with one of his famous medleys, which is pretty much what he did right up to the end. Tremendously popular in his time. I can never remember the figure, but at his peak, he was making the equivalent of something like £30,000 a week in today's money, some ridiculous amount like that. And so consequently, once or twice, you know, if you look through some of the books, and I remember reading one piece somewhere, either online or in a book, which is rather scathing about Charlie and sort of saying, oh, well, you know, limited ability and very sort of saccharine sweet and all the rest of it. All of which, you know, you just get the impression whoever was writing it was rather envious of the fact that he actually was so successful and so popular. Why have to take that away from people, regardless of what you think of their style or their music? He was humongously popular, and it's a bit like whether you like Elton John or not, whether you like Cliff Richard or not, you can't take it away from the fact that they have been humongously popular for a very long time. So even if you don't like them, they clearly do something and have done something for a very long time, which an awful lot of people have. So why criticise would be my take. Great stuff. Charlie Kuntz, and meant to be a rather nice chap as well, played right up until his hands eventually gave up on him, pretty much. Little medley there, Did You Get It? I'll Buy That Dream, followed by It'll Be a Grand Night for Singing. It always is on a Friday night, one way or another. Some good vocalists and some non-vocal tracks as well, of course. Why not? And the final one, It Might As Well Be Spring. Well, we live in hope, Charlie. We live in hope. We might get there in the end. Prior to that, in that little twofer, was the Jack Simpson sextet, a novelty sextet, as it was sometimes billed, but it's a nice, pleasant, swinging music. Playing with him there, Reg Leopold on the violin. Sounded a bit like Stefan Grappelli at times, didn't he? Reg Green, I beg your pardon, Phil Green on the piano, of course, and the accordion. And he would use various guitarists, including Ivor Marantz and Mindy, I think, was it Mindy? Yeah, a singer I really do not know that well at all. Mindy Jackson. Even my book of words came up with nothing for Mindy Jackson. So if you know more about Mindy Jackson, I see there is another Mindy Jackson now, a sort of contemporary Mindy Jackson. It's a great name for a singer. So there seems to be an American vocalist called Mindy Jackson. That wasn't her. At least not unless she's lived an awfully long time and has a very good voice. No, this was a Mindy Jackson going back a good half century, or more than that, a good 70 years or more, so I'm assuming she probably won't be with us these days. Nice noise voice, nice sort of sweet, as you say, sweet, swinging, nice little up-tempo number. But Mindy Jackson it was. If you know about her, let me know, and then I'll let everyone else know. Howard Kane at manxradio.com. Good name, though, I must admit. Mindy Jackson, love it. As for Jack Simpson himself, well, he eventually emigrated to America, where he lived until the end of the 60s. Died in California, I see, in 1970. So he saw a fair swatch of life. Started off probably before the First War and ended up seeing man land on the moon. You can argue the toss about how exciting a time that was to live, but he certainly must have seen some life over the years. Now then, Bud Freeman. As you're probably bored of hearing me say, one of the few I knew quite well. He stayed with us numerous times in my mum and dad's house. And yes, I saw him. We had meals together. We played Scrabble together. I actually knew Bud quite well, I'm happy to say. An interesting character. I think sometimes a character of fun for some of his colleagues because of his rather affected air and the fact that he loved sort of presenting the image and indeed in vocal tone to a degree, in vocal phrasings of a landed gentry Englishman, despite the fact he was a Chicago sax player. But what's not to like is what I'd say. Wonderful stuff. Bud Freeman with Alex Welsh and his band. And what shall we have? What about this one then? I Want a Little Girl. Don't we all? Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Oh, yes. Thank you indeed. Thank you indeed. Great stuff. Alex Welsh, Bud Freeman and the boys. And all very well known and well known on the Isle of Man. So it was the Alex Welsh and his band with Bud Freeman featuring there, of course. And Alex Welsh used to supply the theme tune. If you were regular listeners to Manx Radio over a long period of time, you might remember the old maestro and my dad's old jazz show before Sweet and Swing. He ran a sort of more, slightly wider ranging, so we'd do the big band and the nostalgia we do here, but we'd go to a bit of Miles Davis and a bit more Duke Ellington, maybe a bit of John Coltrane, so it would actually move into the bebop era and sort of a little touch of modern jazz here and there. And that was called Jim's Jazz Era, and Alex Welsh used to provide the theme tune to that. Good tune it was too. I might play it one time. I've got the CD still knocking round. I Want a Little Girl. And who else was on the band or in the band? Well, as I say, a who's who of British jazzers of the 70s and 80s and whatever. So Alex Welsh, trumpet, also here taking vocal duty there as well. Roy Williams, no stranger to Manx Shores, on trombone. John Barnes, ditto. I met both of them. Johnny Barnes certainly stayed with us on several occasions with his wonderful baritone sax and clarinet. Jim Douglas on the guitar. Fred Hunt at the piano. Ron Mathewson bass. Lenny Hastings at the drums. Great one on Lake Records. And there's a sort of facsimile of the poster for the actual gig on the back. Bud Freeman with the Alex Welsh Band. Manchester Sports Guild. Sunday the 19th of June. And you can tell that it was before 1972, was it, decimalisation? Because it is members' tickets 13 and 6. I've forgotten now, decimalisation? 72, anyone? 71? Somewhere around about there, wasn't it? So, 1970, 1969, just trying to see if they've got an exact date on it. A little bit earlier, 1966. Manchester Sports Guild, 19th of June, 1966. I Want a Little Girl. And yes, he was a character, as I say, Bud Freeman. Lovely line of notes from Ralph Lang, who talks about how he says the first time he heard Bud Freeman and he heard Bud's classic track, The Eel, of course, on a 78 Parlophone. It wasn't a long player, but a 78 Parlophone sort of shellac disc. He says, I immediately fell in love with the sound and with the exquisite, loose, slowish blues as well, Home Cooking, which was on the flip side, but I'd never heard anything like The Eel before. It was wonderful. So he says, like, I suppose like an awful lot of you who might be reading these notes, I grew up with Bud Freeman. Born the 1st of April, April Fool's Day, 1906, died 15th of March, 1991. An original begetter of the Chicago-style jazz, along with Eddie Condon and Tesh Mer and Russell Krupp and and Sullivan. He provided an integral stand of the weave that became an influential movement in jazz. Idiosyncratic playing, instantly recognisable licks, which were honed to perfection in the early 30s and remained a foundation of his playing for the next half a century. He spent most of the 30s working in big bands, including Tommy Dorsey and Benny Goodman, and most of his subsequent musical life was spent either in residencies with small groups of his own choosing or touring with packages like Jazz from a Swing Era. Or, of course, all-star groups like the WGJB, the world's greatest jazz band we featured a month or two back. And from the 70s, he quite rightly points out, he spent more and more time in Europe as a featured soloist and became a regular guest in most British clubs, including over here at the Manx Jazz Club as well, which is where I got to know him. And of course, as he points out, I'd almost forgotten, he enthusiastically supported Peter Bozo in the formative days of Pizza Express. Still going strong, as I said earlier on, if you've never been to the Pizza Express in Dean Street, do yourself a favour, get down there. The pizzas are back on form again. Really good, great venue, proper jazz club downstairs in the basement, quite dark, pretty small, good atmosphere, some great musicians there. And the pizzas are back on form again. Sadly, though, not the Bud Freeman. And that shame, though, it is, in the early days. And as Ralph comments there, he says, I haven't eaten in Dean Street for a while, and this is writing 30, 40 years ago. I trust the new owners still offer Pizza Bud Freeman on their menu, which is what they used to do. Sadly, they don't, so don't go looking for one. But if you went back in the day, yes, you could have Pizza Bud Freeman, Pizza Duke Ellington, all the pizzas were named after jazz players, which seemed a very sensible thing to do in a jazz club. Sadly, they binned that off ages ago, and they're all now, you know, Margarita and Sloppy Giuseppe and all the usual ones, which is just the same as you can get everywhere else. I wish they'd go back to the original naming ones of all, at least, the very least, perhaps. Maybe I should suggest it to them. Why not do feature them from time to time, some of these original pizzas? They were fantastic. I have to say the pizzas are very good again now. They went through a slack period for a while, but they're very good again now. But yeah, why not bring back the Pizza Bud Freeman and some of the others as specials, if nothing else? Maybe I should suggest it. There we go. Carol Gibbons, we've been enjoying a little retrospective. Here he is, suffering from that problem of beach comas everywhere, I would say. Is that fair? Yeah, probably is. Sand in my shoes.
From Havana, calling me to that heaven, so heavenly shore, calling me back to you once more. Dreams in the night, dreams of Havana, dreams of a love I haven't the strength to refuse. Darling, the sand is in my shoes. Deep in my veins, the sensuous strain of the soft guitar. Deep in my soul, the thundering roll of a tropic sea. Under the stars, that was a banner. You are the moonlit memory I can't seem to lose. That's why my life's an aimless cruise. All that is real is the feel of the sand in my shoes.
Put your sandals on. That's the answer, isn't it? Sand in my shoes. Carol Gibbons and the Savoy Hotel Orpheans. And the vocals being taken there by Anne Lenner. And yes, we've been enjoying a little bit of the joys, which are the wonderful Carol Gibbons and some of his life. Like I said, meant to be a real gent as well. And another part of the jigsaw was indeed Anne Lenner, featured in this little collection on 7 songs on this CD. And one night in 1934, after playing at the Savoy, Carol and a group of his friends went to relax at Murray's Club, as in Murray Mint, and they were entertained by young girls singing through a megaphone. Can you sing through? I suppose you can, yeah. Difficult to do the quieter romantic numbers through a megaphone, you'd have thought, but there we go. Carol was entranced with her voice and style and invited her to record with him the following day. I mean, that just doesn't happen anymore, does it? The result was so successful that he offered her a contract. It was a daring move. It was, of course, Anne Lenner, the girl we've just heard, the first girl to sing at the Savoy and one of the earliest girls to sing regularly with dance bands in Britain. As you heard there, lovely, soft, pure voice, nice, clear English diction. Perfect foil for the Orpheans. And yes, when other band leaders heard her and thought, oh, we'll have a bit of this. So they went out and dug out some of their own. Great voice. 'Tis true, you can hear every word. You know, much as I love Amy Winehouse, you don't quite pick up every word she's singing, do you? And I'm not singling out Amy. It's just sort of an awful lot of modern vocalese and vocal performers. Difficult to hear what they're saying sometimes. Is that just me? I don't know. Maybe it is. OK, time for a little bit of Ted Heath before the time goes altogether. Wonderful Ted Heath and his boys making a fantastic sound on First Jump. Always like a bit of Ted, and one of those players who crossed the borders for me. He could sound quite traditional, and he could equally sound in some of these later albums really quite modern. And do you think he would have been a modernist if he'd been a bit later? Without a doubt. And always, always, of course, a perfectionist. Just like me, I heard you all say, of course. Or not. Same time, same place next week. See you then. Cheerio.